All right.
All right.
We are on the air. What's up?
Here in Lesbos.
Out here?
Just chilling at Lesbos. Yeah.
It's getting darker every day.
Yeah.
Look at me. I'm like, I have a sexy tan going on.
Yeah. as someone who's melaninly challenged. I'm like two shades less pale.
So. Yeah, you have to put like extra sunblock on.
Absolutely, I'm getting a little
freckly. So, what's your name and what's your major?
My name's Sierra, Sierra Cottle. I'm a student at Northern Arizona University, and I'm studying environmental science, political science, and Spanish.
Okay, awesome. So, what is your initial interest in this issue? Like, what was the thing that made you decide to come out here in the first place?
Oh, gosh. So, I've been kind of following the refugee situation, both from, like, the Latin American perspective and beyond, for a very long time. I have some friends down in the Phoenix area from Burundi, and we got really involved with their community when I was about 14, and we became close friends with a lot of Burundians. And
14, wow. How old are you now?
I am 21.
Okay, yeah. Wow. Okay.
And so that was some of my initial interests, but I've also been very centered in learning about the environment and about climate change. And once I realized that it was such a big problem and it's affecting so many people and their agricultural production and everything, it really made me want to come out here and actually see people on the ground and learn about it from a more micro perspective.
Yeah, you know, you hear about like all this climate change, and a lot of people still think that it's a myth, right? Like,
right. Don't even get me started on that.
Well, you're seeing it out here for yourself. We don't have that much perspective on climate change refugees, so
right.
Give us a little bit of detail about that. What do you know?
Okay, so there are people who are migrating because of environmental issues, whether that's drought, flooding, natural disaster. And it's difficult for a lot of people to see the connection between a certain hurricane and climate change, just because climate change increases the probability and the probability of more intense and frequent storms. And so there's no direct correlation. You can't say, oh, Hurricane Maria was caused by climate change. And so that's caused a lot of difficulty in coining the term environmental migrants or climate refugees, for instance. Even the IOM there's no internationally recognized definition on what makes an environmental migrant, and there's no protections. Like right now, to get refugee status, you have to be fleeing persecution, and so you can't be fleeing a land where your crops just aren't producing anymore.
Right, because you're considered an economic migrant, and that's
right.
A whole different ballpark, right?
Exactly, but more people are displaced every year, and especially internal displacement due to environmental issues than conflict. And a lot of times conflict stems from not having enough water, and then ethnic groups get defensive over their water supply. And so I see it all. I mean, there's other roots too, but environment is kind of where I'm basing most of my studies.
Is there any specific example that you can give us, like from a country specifically that is dealing with this crisis and
yeah.
the refugees that we're seeing?
Over back on the other side of the world, Guatemala is really having a lot of problems with drought, and there have been a few articles that have come out recently about families that are coming up through the U.S.-Mexico border to make a new life because their crops just aren't producing anymore, and one family has to share like a tortilla every day. That's not enough food to sustain people. And so that's kind of a perspective from over there. And then as for another example would be Morocco. Morocco is also having agricultural problems. Bangladesh is flooding, and there are, I don't have the exact numbers, I could pull them up, but there are tons of people who are just losing their homes because they're in like coastal regions, and it's just going under.
Yeah.
So.
And isn't the reason for all these drought and climate change issues from, you know, the 1% of the world who's investing in agro-farming and taking over?
Right.
Right? Like, tell us a little bit about that.
So, we have this thing called negative externalities, right? So when any time a corporation pulls resources from the ground, or you know, I guess monoculture crops. It causes this big issue because all of they don't really feel the impacts. The corporations don't feel the impact of what's happening, and it kind of gets, I guess, exported to the communities on the front lines that are already in environmentally like unstable regions that might be more susceptible to problems and change. But because they're already kind of on the verge of susceptibility, you know, it shifts when the planet starts warming, because those are the regions that get hit first. And so that's why we're seeing flooding and drought in a lot of places. That's why we're seeing wildfires more frequently in the desert southwest of the United States.
Yeah.
And so like for me personally, I see a lot of this as a corporate responsibility to take take charge of what they're doing and actually internalize their externalities.
So I guess that was my next question, is like, on this trip, like, what are some of your reflections based on like what you already know and what you've learned seeing it, you know?
So some of my reflections is that I guess are that there needs to be some serious policy change that addresses both climate change and takes care of the people that are having to migrate. And that was kind of something that I was already thinking about. Obviously, this is what I'm studying, but coming out here and actually seeing people, whether they've fled from persecution or they're environmental migrants or so-called economic migrants, it's just really driven home that that's where I need to be with what I'm learning and doing for my life.
But what about the popular belief? I mean, back in the States, it doesn't seem like people care that much about it, or, I mean...
It's, there is some growing knowledge around climate change, and with the Green New Deal proposed by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and her team, there's a good organization in the States called Citizens Climate Lobby, and they actually, they're international, and they have over 100,000 volunteers worldwide, and so that's gaining a lot of popularity. And so also with the People's Climate Marches, I do think there is a shift and people are starting to wake up, but I also don't think that banning plastic straws is going to make change happen. It's changing economic policy and actually making I guess capitalism take responsibility for what they're doing to the rest of the world, for what it's doing.
I like that. So I guess what would be your final thoughts as a message to just anyone out there who thinks that they feel powerless in doing anything to exact change, you know?
So I'm a big I guess advocate for speaking to your members of Congress, especially in the States. We all can just go into an in-district office, set up a meeting, just call them up on the phone number and say, hey, I want to talk about why I'm upset about climate change, or why I'm upset about refugee issues and that sort of thing, because there is so much information out there. And when a representative or a congressperson gets that information from a constituent, they're seeing that as an actual problem, that, you know, it's not just about jobs or whatever they're hearing, healthcare. And so I guess what I have to say is speak up, speak out, speak to your members of Congress, just talk. If you're talking to someone who doesn't believe in climate change, try to find some common ground about how you both care about public health. And you think that it's really rough that, you know, kids have a lot of asthma. There are kids all over in especially urban environments with asthma, and how if you bring down pollutants, especially greenhouse gases, those asthma levels will drop. And if you can make those connections and build that bridge, then people can slowly start to draw connections.
That's amazing. Thank you for talking with us. Do you have anything that you want to plug, you know, so people can find you?
Anything that I want to plug? I run a group on my campus called Fair Trade NAU. We're trying to become a fair trade designated university, which would incorporate both environmental, social, and economic sustainable practices in what we're purchasing. So chocolate and tea, making sure it's grown right and the people are treated right and that there's no environmental degradation that's really happening because of that. So check out Fair Trade campaigns, like the overarching the overarching organization.
Is there like a website?
Yeah, it's just fairtradecampaigns.org.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I absolutely love that organization. And through them, I've learned a lot about the connections between climate change and migration and how giving people the autonomy to produce in a way that is climate resilient can be really helpful for making sure that people don't have to leave their homes, because no one actually really wants to leave their homeland.
Yeah. Do you want to plug your Instagram?
Plug my Instagram?
You don't have to.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let's do it. My Instagram is Scientist Sierra, S-I-E-R-R-A.
That's prophetic.
Thank you. It's either that or Coddle for Congress, but I'm not quite there yet. I don't want to coin that yet, you know?
Okay, nice. I like that.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
That was Sierra Coddle, whose viewpoints on climate change refugees should really help to paint a wider picture of the injustices that reflect our own in the United States. It's conversations like these that really help us to open our eyes to global awareness and can inspire a new viewpoint if you're open to it. I mean, if you want an example, I wasn't really aware of who Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was until Sierra told me about her. So when I came home, I looked her up, I did my research, and I found out that she's proposing this Green New Deal that is a bold transformation of our economy to finally address the corporate polluters and billionaires in America who leave middle and low-class families to take the brunt of their consequences. There are people in West Virginia who are dying right now of cancer from toxic pollution, and no one's doing anything about it. I watched this documentary that, if you haven't seen it yet, you really should. It's on Netflix, and it's called Knock Down the House. It talks all about the issues we just spoke of, all about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's rise to Congress, as women all over the country are standing up and speaking out. It's really empowering. So in this next segment, I interviewed Sierra's professors from Northern Arizona University. They're a happily married couple who saw the parallels of what they're teaching about the U.S.-Mexico border issues in their state and the refugee crisis in Europe. So let's listen up. Press record here. So what is your name? And your title, I guess we could start with that.
My name is Robert Neustadt, and I am a professor of Spanish and director of Latin American Studies at Northern Arizona University.
For your wife, too, just so that we can introduce you, can you tell us your name also and what your title is back at home?
My name is Erica Hess, and I'm an associate professor of French at Northern Arizona University.
Perfect. So what... What inspired you to come out and study the refugee crisis, first of all?
For me and us, the original introduction to the broader context of this was the U.S.-Mexico border. And in 2010, I started teaching classes about the U.S.-Mexico border, and my colleague and wife came with me with that very first trip, where we took students to the border, and we crossed the border into Mexico, and we spoke with recently deported people, and we met with the Border Patrol, and we went out with humanitarians putting water out in the desert, and we visited places in the desert where people had perished trying to cross the border. And that experience, that very first field trip, was sort of an earth-shattering experience for all of us, for the students, for me, for Erica. And I've continued to teach classes around that theme and take students to the border for many years now, since 2010. And then in 2015, we were living on sabbatical in Lyon, France, when the European refugee crisis sort of exploded in the media. And we started thinking about the differences and similarities. And we decided to run this program to look at things from a global context and talk about how in some ways it's different, in some ways it's the same thing.
Yeah, and what is your reflection on that, the similarities and differences between what we're facing and the refugee crisis out here?
Well, you know, it's interesting because when I'm teaching, I'm always saying things are much more complex than they seem. And the politicians and the media, they tend to give little sound bites and simplify what are very complex social, political, environmental issues. But at the same time, I think you can also just sort of look at it from up above and say it's the same damn thing. It's poor people of color that are fleeing violence, poverty, hunger, and trying to reach safety and are risking their lives in order to try to get to a place where they and their families can live a decent and safe life. So while the particularities are different, here we've got people that are crossing the sea, and in Arizona we've got people crossing the desert. Here we've got people fleeing war in Syria and Afghanistan, for example. In Central America we've got people fleeing the legacies of war in Central America. We've got people fleeing horrific gang violence. Climate change is a common push factor in both areas, where you've got people that are unable to support themselves and support their families in Africa or in Central America. So while many details are different, many are very parallel as well. Mm.
And at any time, Professor, feel free to, you know, chime in and interrupt, okay, if you have anything to add.
Yeah, I would just add in terms of one small difference that I think has a big impact is that in Europe, we have met with, on this trip, and I know there are many other NGOs, we have met with a number of NGOs from a variety of countries. And so you have not only the Greek governmental organizations that are trying to deal with this issue, but Greek NGOs, and then we've also worked with NGOs from the U.S., from the U.K., right now here on the island of Lesbos, we're working with a Dutch NGO. And so I think that there are a lot of aspects of that are beneficial, because there are a lot of people who are really concerned about the issue and are trying to help, but it's also really complicated because there's some redundancy and there's some difficulty in organizing all of those different well-intentioned people to be able to do the most good. I think in the U.S. we don't have that. It's not like we have, I mean, we have definitely some NGOs, but we don't have so many NGOs from different countries coming together in the U.S.
Right, that's a really interesting difference, where in the U.S. we're talking about a 2,000-mile border separating two countries, Mexico and the United States. And here we've got the European Union, so this border is surrounding this entire union of separate countries that supposedly don't have borders between them. Unfortunately, in our view, I think, that idealism of the European Union being a borderless union is also tending to disappear as different governments start to secure their own borders and build walls to try to keep refugees from crossing the European Union. But it's just sort of a different context and different geographic partitioning, but it's the same thing. It's closing people from the global south out from lands of opportunity.
And do you see this as an issue, this issue of immigration, as kind of a issue of racism that we in the United States know so much about?
I do. If you visit a detention center in Arizona, the racial component is immediately visible. Everyone in there is dark. There's just no question about that. And you know, here it's a little more across the spectrum, because you have people from sub-Saharan Africa who are black, and then you've got people from Middle Eastern countries and Arabic countries who are not quite so dark. But I think that there is very much a racial component, and that's clear if you listen to the discourse of European politicians, whether that be Marine Le Pen in France or you know, the Hungarian government or whatever, where people are worried that their quote-unquote traditional Western civilization is going to disappear. And in the United States, we've got the same issue. We certainly have them in Arizona, but people like Chris Kobach in Kansas as well are quite straightforward about the fact that they don't want white people to become a minority, and they're worried about that, as well they should be, because this is going to end.
Right. And on that topic of racism, why do you think it's becoming more socially acceptable more than ever before? Well, before, several decades ago, of course, but...
That's a very good and a very difficult question. I don't have the answer to it. I do know that when Donald Trump was elected president of the United States... and before he was elected, during the campaign, his campaign awakened and emboldened what we used to think was a right-wing, whack-job, racist minority. And over the last couple of years, we've realized that there are a lot more of, quote-unquote, those people than we ever realized before. And now, with horror, I think we're observing the same thing happening globally, with Le Pen's party winning a majority in France, with Brexit in the UK, with Brazil,
Salvini
in Italy. I am horrified. I wish I could, you know, find a more optimistic way to talk about this stuff. I don't want to depress anybody, but these are really scary times, I think.
What is it that we can do, like, as a population? I mean, what, in your opinion, like, there's a lot of people in America and out here in Europe who are apathetic and just... think that, you know, there's nothing that they can do, so might as well just leave the country altogether.
One thing we found in talking about the situation in Arizona is that a lot of times a story of an individual or of a family helps someone who hasn't previously been really engaged or concerned about this issue become aware. And so I think a lot of times numbers are just too abstract. They don't really reach people. But if more people can hear individual stories or stories on a smaller scale, I definitely think that that can help awaken a lot of people.
Do you think that people are asleep right now on this issue?
A lot of people are. I mean, we even find that in Arizona. And I'll speak with Bob right now. In his classes, the majority of his students are Arizonans, and a lot of them at the beginning of the semester do not realize that there is a humanitarian crisis taking place in their own backyard, in their own state. And that's people that are like on the line. And so obviously people who are more physically removed from that also, it makes sense to me that they would have less awareness. But I think it's... Yeah, there are many, 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 many people, probably most people, who are asleep on the issue right now. And then when they do hear about it at all, they kind of just shut it out. It's like too much to...
Yeah.
Just like, don't want to bother with that.
Right. So you're out here on the island Lesbos, and you're with students, right? Can you tell us a little bit of what your program is about and why you're here, what you're doing out here?
Sure. The idea is to study the refugee crisis from as many different perspectives as possible and to gain as comprehensive an understanding of the issue as possible. So we have done a lot of reading, and in addition to that, we spent a week in Athens talking with different NGOs who are responding to different aspects of the crisis, from people working on the psychological challenges that refugees and children face, to artists who have a collective, a collaborative, who work together making art and trying to make a go of it, to people who use art therapeutically to help children overcome their trauma. And then we spent a week in Sardis in northern Greece volunteering with an American NGO that provides psychosocial support and enrichment activities to Yazidi refugees. In Sardis, there's a refugee camp that is only for Yazidi refugees, which are people that many people have never heard of, but they have been subjected to a genocide in northern Iraq and Syria. And they are working with them, and we volunteered with them, distributing clothing to them, and doing different activities with children and women. And now we're on Lesbos, and we'll be working with a Dutch NGO called Movement on the Ground. Yesterday we were putting up shade cloth outside their ISO boxes, the little houses that they live in Karatepe refugee camp, which is the camp for the most vulnerable refugees here. And we'll also be in Moria, and we hope to meet with Frontex and as many different people as we can here to gain an understanding. And at the same time, to feel like we can do something. Sort of to dovetail with your previous question, you know, I think first comes awareness of the issue, and then after that, I think at least we feel that once you know what's going on, then you have a certain obligation, or at least we feel a certain obligation, to try to do something. And what each individual does is up to him or her. Whether that is just talking to their friends and neighbors, or fundraising for NGOs, or writing songs, or making art, or creating podcasts, or
donating money,
or volunteering with refugees, or whatever. But
we just need people to care.
We need people to understand. We need people to care. We need people to try to do something.
Yeah.
Because the situation is just so dire.
Yeah. Do you have anything that you want to add to that?
I think that's really it. Just awareness, and I think that spreading awareness, like if each of us can tell our families, our friends, what we've seen and what we've learned, that's a huge beginning, a huge start. And I think that in terms of waking people up, the people who are sleeping, to hear stories of individuals, and also to hear stories from people that they know and trust, just spreading awareness and including a greater number of people in the, you know, sort of larger caring community, and then for each person to decide how they want to engage with it, but to do something, just to do something.
Yeah. Is there anything that you want to plug for our listeners?
Along the lines of trying to do something, one of the things I do is I write songs about migrants and refugees. And I try to use that music both as a way to raise awareness and also to raise funds for organizations that are doing good things. So I've recorded an album which I dropped in the fall, called Voluntary Return Songs of Solidarity with Migrants and Refugees. And it's mostly my original songs, most of which are about the situation on the U.S.-Mexico border. A few of them are about the situation here in Europe. There's one song called Itty Bitty Dots that's about people taking rafts and boats, risking their lives to try to reach small islands like Lesbos. And I donate all of the proceeds from the album to two organizations, one called the Colibri Center for Human Rights, which works in southern Arizona to identify the remains of deceased border crossers to try to let their families know what happened to them, where they perished, and perhaps to repatriate those remains so that people can at least know what happened to their loved ones. I wouldn't say closure, because I think that's kind of a myth, but it's a type of suffering for people who have had their loved ones just disappear that no one deserves. Half of the proceeds go to the Colibri Center, and then the other half go to a group called No More Deaths, No Más Muertes, which is a group that puts water in the desert in Arizona to try to keep border crossers from dying while crossing the border. And their mission is to end death and suffering in the Arizona-Mexico borderland. So those two ends of the equation, we try to raise money for them. So, that album is available on CD Baby, both as a physical CD, but also as a digital download. And the songs can be listened to for free as well.
Awesome.
There's a nitty bitty dot out in the Indian Ocean. It's a nitty bitty dot off the coast of Madagascar. And that itty bitty dot is in the European Union. If you can get there, you get a little chance to eat. There's an itty bitty dot in the middle of the Mediterranean. It's an itty bitty dot that's part of Italy. Lampedusa's the real sweet spot. If you can get there, then you've got at least a little chance to be free. So we pay the smuggler. We pay Big Bank to squeeze us on a little bitty boat. And we toss like a cup on the great big sea and pray to heaven that this won't be the end of you, the kids and me. And the waves grow bigger and taller. And this boat is taking on water. And that little bit of hope that looks so near has just dissolved and turned to fear. Can't swim, no place to run. Everyone's sick and the kids are all crying. With too many folk and some are dying. There's sharks at sea and in this boat. Hold the baby, never give up hope. I'll love you, dear, till the end of time. There's more itty bitty dots in the Atlantic Ocean. There's some itty bitty dots off the coast of Turkey. There's hunger at home and big bombs are blasting. Looks like that teeny weeny dot's a chance for you and me. And the waves grow bigger and taller. And this boat is taking on water. And we toss like a cup on the great big sea and pray to heaven that this won't be the end of you, the kids and me. And the waves grow bigger and taller. And this boat is filling with water. And that little bit of hope that looks so near has just dissolved and turned to fear. Can't swim, no place to run. And the waves grow bigger and taller. And this boat is filling with water. And that little bit of hope that looks so near has just dissolved and turned to fear. Lord, please have mercy. Thank you.